I held the vial up to the light for a moment before slipping it into the breech. The way the red fluid twinkled, the way it flowed sluggishly one moment and then with blinding speed the next, it reminded me far too much of the red lake at the heart of the Caliuche. Except that there never was a Caliuche, was there? Just something much stranger, to which the ghost ship myth had attached itself like a parasite. And hadn't that memory of skies always been there, at the back of my mind? I had recognized dream fuel from almost the moment I saw it. There was enough in that red lake to drown in, I thought. I slammed the wedding gun against my neck and pushed the fuel into my carotid artery. There was no rush, no hallucinogenic transition. Fuel was not a drug in that sense. It acted globally across the brain rather than hitting any single region. It wanted only to arrest cellular decay and to repair recent damage, bringing memories back into focus and re-establishing connective pathways that had recently been broken. It seemed to tap into a recent map of what had been, as if the body carried a lingering field which changed more slowly than the cellular patterns themselves. That was why fuel was able to fix both injuries and memories just as easily, without the drug itself knowing anything about physiology or neuroanatomy.
"Quality shit," Ratko said. "I only use the best myself, men."
"Then you're saying that not everything that comes out of here is as good?" Zebra asked.
"Hey, like I said, one for Gideon."
Ratko led the three of us along a series of twisting makeshift tunnels. They had been equipped with lights and a rudimentary floor, but they were more or less bored through solid rock. It was as if the complex had been tunneled back into the chasm wall. "I keep hearing rumors," I said, "about Gideon's health. Some people think that's why he's letting the cheap stuff hit the streets, because he's too ill to manage his own lines of supply." I hoped I had not said anything which would betray my ignorance of the true situation, but Ratko just said,
"Gideon's still producing. That's all that matters right now."
"I won't know until I see him, will I?"
"He's not a pretty sight, I hope you realize."
I smiled. "Word gets around."
Chapter 36.
While Ratko was leading us towards Gideon, I allowed the next episode to happen. That was how it seemed, anyway, that now it was up to me when it happened, as if it were simply a case of digging through 300-year-old memories, sorting them into something like chronological order, and letting the next lot flood my mind. There was nothing jarringly unfamiliar about it anymore. It was as if I half knew exactly what was going to happen, but just hadn't given the matter much recent thought, like a book I hadn't opened in a long time, but whose story could never completely surprise me. Sky and Norquinko were climbing down from the shaft where they had emerged, negotiating the chamber's slippery, scalloped sides until they were standing near the shore of the Red Lake. The maggot which rested in the lake, tens of meters away, had just introduced itself as Largo. Sky steeled himself. He felt a tremendous sense of fear and strangeness, but he was convinced that it was his destiny to survive this place.
"Largo?" he said. "I don't know. From what I gather, Largo was a man."
"I'm also that which existed before, Largo."
The voice, though loud, was calm and strangely lacking in menace.
"This is difficult to say through Largo's language. I am Largo, but I am also traveling fearlessly."
"What happened to Largo?"
"That's also not easy. Excuse me."
There was a pause while gallons of red fluid gushed out of the maggot into the lake.